Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week's edition of Rewind, your week in review.
Well, my motto is study hard, pray harder.
Combining church with the government is a tenet of fascism.
Vice President Pence's visit signals that Wisconsin remains a must-win state for President Trump.
Now you owe me an apology for this disgusting slander.
Supreme Court candidates have their sharpest exchange yet.
We can ignore the issue, and one day the voters are going to say enough.
Republican sponsors of a medical marijuana bill say giving the sick that option has overwhelming public support, and their bill should get a public hearing. All that and was politics stock picks on Rewind, your week in review for January 31.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Okay, J.R., help me connect these dots, as our governor says. January 14th, Mr. Trump goes to Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. Exactly 2 weeks later, just a few days ago, Mr. Pence comes to Madison. Are we going to continue to see either the president or the vice president every 2 weeks?
I know every 2 weeks we're going to see him a lot. Now, what's interesting is that Pence came to Madison to talk school choice. When
yes.
School choice really was born in Milwaukee, went to Racine, and then started going statewide.
Yeah.
But the feedback I got this week was the reason that Pence was there was, one, kind of a national celebration of school choice going on. This was the biggest celebration in the best venue in the most swingy state for him to go to. So that's why he's in the state capitol. I mean, it's not really the hotbed of school choice, but that's where the event was.
Okay.
Some people argue to me that it would make more sense to go to Milwaukee and go to one of the top public private top schools in the choice program, do the event there, but this is where he was.
Okay.
And the politics of it, well, guess who are largely, the students who already make up the school choice program, Milwaukee and Racine, they're largely African-American and Hispanic.
Yeah.
President Trump.
We'll get into those numbers in a minute. Yep.
President Trump of 2016, I think he got less than a third of the Hispanic vote in Wisconsin. In the single digits African-Americans in Wisconsin. He may not get better numbers, but he can't do worse. He needs to make some inroads, especially if we're going to find more voters, turn out more people this fall. It would behoove him to find more pockets of support.
And this is the time to hear parts of Vice President Pence's speech, followed by a quick snippet from Speaker Robin Voss. Please.
There are tens of thousands of events all across America celebrating National School Choice Week. But I'm here in Wisconsin because this is where it all began. For the past 30 years, Wisconsin has shown again and again that when parents are given the opportunity to choose the best school for their children, whether that's public or private, parochial, Christian, or homeschool, outcomes improve. Kids do better. And education improves for everyone. Wisconsin has an extraordinary record of success with school choice, and every family in Wisconsin should be proud. Wisconsin students on the parental choice program score higher on the ACT test than their peers. In Milwaukee, kids from underserved communities who go to choice or charter schools get better test scores and are more likely to graduate. Many of the children who benefit the most come from our underserved communities that face unique challenges. And thanks to what you've done here in Wisconsin, it's been particularly minority communities that have benefited again and again. Thousands of African American and Hispanic parents that wouldn't be able to do otherwise have been able to choose where their children go to school here in Wisconsin. Now 1 in 8 Wisconsin students is educated with public funds at the school of their choice.
Is it fair that in Milwaukee students can apply to the best schools in the state when right here in Madison they have limited choices? I don't think that's fair. Wisconsin has one of the highest racial achievement gaps in the country. In Madison, right here where school choice has not yet taken root, the gap is the worst. Right now, this state needs more school choice, not less.
Just a P.S. on the vice president's speech. It's ironic. He's standing in our rotunda, may have been the first visit by a sitting vice president. I don't know, historical footnote. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the U.S. Senate is, President Trump is on trial. No mention of that.
No.
So why not?
They're trying to focus again on trying to attract Hispanic and African-American voters. Look at what some of the stuff Trump has done. Criminal justice reform, right? He's talked about that. There's obviously an appeal there. Work with Kim Kardashian on that issue, you know, and Kanye West. They have school choice. He's talked about unemployment numbers for African-American and Hispanic residents of this country under his tenure. He's trying to make a pitch, again, to try to improve those numbers we saw in 2016, or at the very least, if Democrats nominate somebody who's not exciting those voters, much like Hillary Clinton didn't excite those voters in 2016, if you at least make it a wash where they go, okay, I'm not that happy with Trump. This person doesn't make me real thrilled. I'm going to sit this one out because it really inspires me. Because I might give him a shot.
But when you look at Trump's record on things like the border wall and immigration, there's a lot there anyway.
There's okay. That other factor. I mean, go there, the comments about blank hole countries. I mean, like, there's a lot of fodder there. Some Democrats I talked to were like, look, if he wants to do this, great, but it's hard to see him picking up significant numbers with minority voters because of his record. At the same time, in a state decided by fewer than 23,000 votes in 2016, even 2,000-3,000 voters here and there will make a difference in the big picture of Wisconsin this fall.
Okay, I want to stay, topic two, I want to stay on choice for a little bit. This resulted, the vice president spoke, and then Democrat Jonathan Brostoff of Milwaukee was followed by Kevin Nicholson. Brostoff would like to get rid of choice, and Mr. Nicholson defended it. So let's listen to Mr. Brostoff and Nicholson, and then we'll walk through the growth in choice.
Lower class sizes have clearly and consistently been linked to better educational outcomes and specifically have helped to reduce the racial education gap that Wisconsin suffers. Instead of lining the pockets of the big donors and their education privatization lobbyists and other swindlers, we need to reinvest in Wisconsin, hire more teachers, lower classroom sizes, and make sure that every student is getting access to the attention that they deserve. This is the same administration that's just as worried about making money off of our kids as they want to lock kids up in cages and separate them from their parents at gunpoint. That's the type of leadership that Mike Pence and his administration have brought to our state, and we say no. We believe in public education.
I want to start by saying what a great celebration of success. About 800 kids come to the Capitol today to share their stories, to talk about how their lives have been improved by educational outcomes that were previously available to them, if not for school choice programs. It's an incredible testament to the success of school choice. And when you look at the record of school choice programs in Wisconsin, whether we're talking ACT scores or you're talking about math proficiency or English proficiency, you're seeing kids succeed. The creation of a launching pad. It is disappointing to see Governor Evers and the Democrats in the legislature push back on those platforms of success for their own constituents. So what we as conservatives will do is continue to fight for these kids, fight for their opportunities, and make sure that they have these platforms to launch their life and be successful going forward.
Choice is one of the most dramatic programs that I've watched in my, 31 years in the Capitol. So I just want to walk through it, J.R. So it was started by Governor Thompson, who cut a deal with
Polly Williams,
after a great deal of back and forth. So in 1990, only 337 Milwaukee students were enrolled in the Choice program, which as a result of that deal between Annette Polly Williams and Governor Thompson, got it started. 1995, a huge policy decision to expand it to church-run schools. That's a big deal. Then you go to 2011. That was the date the Republicans took over, and Speaker Voss was instrumental.
Co-chair.
Joint Finance co-chair. Instrumental in getting Choice expanded to Racine. And then 2013, only 2 years later, expanded it to statewide. And now the numbers from DPI, 42,392 students enrolled in Choice statewide. So I'm struck by the tremendous growth. NEPS, on your thoughts on Choice?
Their statewide program has a cap on enrollment that goes up, I think, 1 percentage point each year.
Yeah.
Until 2026-27, it goes away, and there'll be no limits on enrollment statewide. It'll be interesting to watch what happens when that comes, you know, barring a policy change between now and then, what happens with school choice, the growth then. And then also there's a complaint from Democrats that we're funding two school systems. And the longer you do that, you're going to starve one to feed the other. Now, school choice folks, that's not the case. they can coexist, but there's definitely a fear among Democrats of like what's going to happen for public schools if this program continues, the voucher program.
And Choice has become a very, very expensive program now. I mean, but you heard the arguments. Parents feel empowered. And
you get the debate about the cost, like how much education costs a kid in Milwaukee versus the voucher for a choice. I mean, they go back and forth constantly.
And they go back and forth on the data and what it actually shows. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's one of the most contested programs in terms of actually how students do. Yeah. It's just very interesting. Okay, topic three. Yesterday, Milwaukee Bar Association forum between the three Supreme Court candidates, Justice Daniel Kelly, Dane County Judge Jill Karofsky, Marquette University Professor Ed Filone. Let's listen to this back and forth, elbows out debate before you and I talk about it a little bit. Please.
I have spent the past several months traveling all around Wisconsin, and I hear the same thing from voters. What they see on the Supreme Court are justices who do not follow the rule of law. They see justices who make decisions before anyone walks into the state Supreme Court chamber. They see justices who are acting like politicians, and all of that feels like corruption to people. When Justice Kelly talks about his rigorous logic, what he is talking about is that he is getting to a predetermined outcome. Are we going to have a justice who has a track record for following the rule of law, or are we going to have a justice who has a track record for always finding in favor of the people who got him on the court in the first place and are going to work like crazy to keep him on the court?
I have never had my honor or my integrity called into question, ever, in the depth and breadth of the practice of law that I've done over the last 25 years until now when it suits your political ambition. This is about your personal advancement, and you don't care who you're going to lie about to get there. So here you come and say that the court is acting in a corrupt function. I'll remind you there are seven members of the court, and that means any decision taken by a court requires the agreement of at least four of the members. And unless I miss my mark, the cases that you're referring to have all involved Chief Justice Pat Rogensack. And so what you say of me, if that's true, then it must be true of her as well. And that is an outrageous slander. Now, you owe me an apology for this disgusting slander. I don't think you'll get one, because if you didn't have slander, you wouldn't have a campaign. But you do owe Chief Justice Rogensack an apology.
And Kelly, I'm not going to be bullied by you.
There may be people around the state of Wisconsin who are happy to see our Supreme Court elections descend to this level. If there are, I've never met them. As I've gone around the state, what I hear again and again is thank you for trying to keep politics out of the race. Thank you for not talking in terms of our side, their side, my team, their team. We have only seven seats. This is our chance to get your voice, your perspective, fighting for all of us on the court. And that's why I'm running.
Judge Karofsky does not shy away from using the corruption term. Mm-hmm. And we saw in that video Justice Kelly saying that's slander, that's the only issue you have. I demand an apology. And because it takes a four-justice majority to make any major decision, you're also slandering the Chief Justice, Justice Rogensack. Then you should apologize to both. I'm not going to be bullied. What's your take on, and Mr. Filone says, hey, you've heard how difficult these other two candidates, I'm the independent. Your take on that?
A couple of things. One, remember in this past Supreme Court race in 2019, you know, there was a knock on Judge Neubauer, Lisa Neubauer, as she pursued an open seat on the court, that she didn't inspire the Democratic base. She kept hitting Brian Hagedorn, a conservative, over his past writings on homosexuality, right, association with a Christian school that barred employees from being in gay relationships, but she never excited them beyond that attack. She kept talking about being an impartial, you know, justice, and just ran kind of a bland campaign other than the attack. It ended up igniting conservatives who got really fired up and turned out as a backlash against that tactic. One of the thoughts I've heard is that progressive justices or judges running for the Supreme Court or candidates can't just assume saying I'm going to be impartial is going to excite anybody. You got to give them something to kind of lump latch on to. And go, okay, I'm fired up now. So maybe this is part of that campaign of saying, hey, the court's got a problem. It's bought and paid for by conservative groups. They're getting all the rulings, so we should be I'm just throwing this out there. The flip side, though, is we're looking at a dynamic this spring where, again, that primary for president, the Democratic side, if it's still going hot and heavy come April, mm-hmm. could drive turnout and make Daniel Kelly's life very difficult. Conservatives need to find a way to get motivated to turn people out. This may give them more fodder to motivate their voters to turn out that a court's under attack by this progressive candidate.
Okay, but I want to stay on this for just, I want to make this point. A year ago, then-candidate Court of Appeals Judge Hagedorn says, I knew when I walked into the Supreme Court how former Chief Justice Shirley Abramson was going to rule against me. Now you have Kurofsky saying when litigants enter that court, they know that Dan Kelly is on the side of big corporations, and you heard her say polluters. So you have a little bit of the same charge offered by in a different context.
It's red meat for the base. They're just different bases. It's the same kind of a line, but for different bases. That's all it is.
Okay. And then primary February 18th?
February 18th. I mean, Fallon's at a disadvantage right now because he doesn't have the money the other two have. He's got a bank on, you know, Milwaukee turnout. He's got a county executive race, primary for county executive, primary for mayor in Milwaukee. But there's big turnout there that can maybe help him a little bit, but he doesn't have the resources the other guys do to get up on the air and spread his name around on those kinds of things. So that's his challenge. But yet, you know, he does have Milwaukee as a base that could help him.
Well, third-party candidate, third-party groups are going to play a big role between now and April 7th?
Now in April, likely. I don't know about ahead of the primary. With April, I've gotten feedback of two trains of thought about conservative groups. One, there are some that are fired up for Kelly no matter what because they saw what happened with Hagedorn. They want to fight. They're jazzed up for the fight. They're going to turn out and help him no matter what. The second thought is there are probably some conservative groups, traditional Republican groups, who prepare for the fight but wait and see what mid-March looks like and say, okay, that turnout for that primary for president, you know, it's going to be huge for Democrats. It's maybe not worth the money, or Kelly's not looking too good right now. Or if he's looking pretty good, there's a path to victory, even with a contested primary for president on the Democratic side. We're going to jump in now. Or that primary is done. Like, let's say candidate X sweeps the first four primaries and caucuses, is like got all the momentum. He or she then is like the de facto nominee by mid-March. That's a whole different ballgame then.
Okay. And just to go back to something you said, Kurofsky is so much in the attack mode because last year Lisa Neubauer was
just,
not.
It's just one theory about why you would do something like, why would you be that aggressive? Just to lay out an inspiration of, you know, this court's being taken away from, paraphrasing progressives here, the court's been taken away from us. We have to get it back.
Okay. New topic. Two Republicans, Senator Kathy Bernier and Assistant Assembly Majority Leader Mary Felskowski, actually put a medical marijuana bill out there. Now, I waited to ask them to tape a Newsmakers interview, and they were in this week, and what they said was very intriguing. So before we walk through their bill, let's listen to some of their comments. And one huge takeaway, they say that there is overwhelming public support for medical marijuana bill. Excuse me, please.
Quite a few years ago when I was running for the assembly and I was knocking on doors in a trailer park in the town of Seymour, and there was a woman there who was undergoing chemotherapy and had cancer, and she begged and pleaded for me to legalize it. You don't just go out and get medical marijuana. You have a conversation with a medical professional that would prescribe it. And so I don't understand the pushback of the anti-recreational marijuana folks, but I think that under a doctor's, physician's prescription and monitoring, I think we don't need to micromanage everything.
Do you think, as you work on this issue, that the law is widely being violated on medical marijuana now?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Okay.
We have a huge black market because mm-hmm. of it. I hear from people day in and day out because we introduced this bill.
Massive numbers of people have contacted my office in support.
People want organics. They don't want prescription drugs. They want to try to heal themselves naturally or do as many things as they can. You know, when the FDA puts a drug on the market and you hear it on TV and the majority of the commercial is side effects, you know, people don't want that.
Okay. Just to be clear, I think I heard you say it, but I want to clarify. both of you now do not support recreational marijuana. Is that a fair statement?
That's a fair statement.
That's a fair statement. Because these are Republicans, and because they're offering a serious proposal, they said they worked quite hard on it, talking to medical association and everything. Let's just walk through a few provisions. Senator Bernier and Representative Felskowski says the bill has tight controls, does not allow medical marijuana to be smoked. And I was intrigued. Representative Felskowski, who has survived cancer twice, she said, and the interview is on WSI.org, I am never going to let another opioid into my body, and I would have welcomed a chance to have a medical marijuana option. And they both said, as we heard, overwhelming public support for this. And finally, you heard my question, they both oppose legalizing recreational marijuana. Now, JR, have I just wasted our time because this bill is just going to go nowhere? Because it's still one of the most emotional issues out there.
It's not going anywhere this session. One of the big roadblocks is Scott Fitzgerald, Senate Majority Leader. And let's be honest, not he alone in his caucus. There are plenty of other people in that caucus, a Senate GOP caucus, who oppose it. Fitzgerald, however, is currently unopposed GOP nomination for Jim Sensenbrenner's seat.
Fifth U.S. House seat.
He raised some 400-some grand in the last quarter of 2019. He's in pretty good shape to win that seat. I mean, I don't want to diminish the chances of a Democratic upset, but it's a very, 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 very Republican seat. It'd be a major shock if the Republican didn't win. So let's say Fitzgerald goes off to Congress. Okay, different dynamic now in the Senate caucus. Robin Voss, the Speaker, has said he's open to it, but with restrictions. He's not a fan of this bill, I don't think.
He is not a fan of that bill. Representative Felskowski told me the Speaker doesn't like this bill. Okay, but let me listen to my math, okay? You have Senator Tustin willing to vote for medical marijuana. You have Senator Bernier. I talked to a chief of staff of another Republican senator who said, my boss is leaning towards this. So if they could ever get it, what are they seeking? They don't want a full vote. They want a committee hearing.
There were, and when this issue's come up, and by the way, the whole thing about overwhelming support, we've ever heard that before from Tony Evers when he put it in his budget to do medical marijuana.
And recreational.
Now, here's the dynamic, though. For Republicans, I asked about this when this has come up before. One of the responses I got was, we know it's coming, but we want to do it the most conservative way possible. We're also afraid, however, of opening that door. Because once you open the door to medical marijuana, you have opened the door to eventually someday getting to recreational marijuana. They don't feel like they can stop it. Like, it's a slippery slope. The question, though, is how do you put a conservative stamp on this? Assuming that Republicans stay in charge for the next few years, how would it make it palatable to them? They know it's totally popular that people want it. But they don't feel like, again, it's a driver issue. So, like, it's not like taxes or your kid's school or abortion or guns. It's something that, yeah, I you know, voters want to see medical marijuana, but are they turning out because of medical marijuana? Probably not.
Okay. It's a fascinating issue. Next topic, JR. The governor made good on his promise to sign an executive order creating a People's Maps Commission. You and I went through the executive order, so let's just summarize it a little bit. Who could be on it? Residents of all 8 U.S. House districts, leaders of communities of interest, that's a term from the order, experts in nonpartisan redistricting, who couldn't be on it, elected officials, public officials, lobbyists, political party officials, and they couldn't even do their work for a year. Now, the governor said this is an important and it's backed by a majority. How symbolic is creating a People's Maps Commission, which can't even begin to look at data for a year?
Well, it's very symbolic. I mean, look, the map that this commission creates, assuming it reaches one, I'm sure there's going to be a court fight next year. Not sure where the court fight's going to be yet, whether federal court or state court, but there'll be a court fight, most likely. I'm sure this map gets submitted to lawmakers to consider as they take the first whack at it. When the courts take up the issue, I'm sure that's going to be submitted to them. But there's no weight. It carries no weight of law because the state constitution vests the power to draw the lines with the legislature. So
Yes. There's
that. Now, Evers, in a state of state address last week, fed some meat to his base, which was this. Again, it's not a mover issue. If you go look at the referendums on nonpartisan redistricting, they are overwhelmingly support each time they go up, right?
Yeah.
But who goes out and votes because of a nonpartisan redistricting commission? Not many people. Not when you have, health care.
No.
Right? Tax, again, the big ones.
Right.
But it's a, the people care passionately about it. It is something that feeds that base for Evers. That's why part of why he did it.
Okay, let's listen to Attorney General Call and Mr. Evers, and then we'll take a look at the Speaker's response. Please.
This is not a partisan issue. This is about nonpartisanship. Over time, both Democrats and Republicans have gerrymandered districts. This is about putting an end to that practice in Wisconsin so that the power to select our legislators is where it belongs, in the hands of the people of Wisconsin.
When 80% of our state supports medical marijuana and 80% of our state supports universal background checks and also risk protection orders, 70% want Medicaid expansion, and elected officials can ignore those numbers and say, go jump in a lake. Something's wrong. People should be able to choose their elected officials, not the other way around. And the people of Wisconsin agree. Over 50 counties representing 78% of Wisconsinites have passed resolutions around supporting nonpartisan redistricting. So today I'm signing the executive order that establishes the People's Map Commission.
Maybe the final word on this subject should come from the Speaker's statement. He said he can form whatever fake, phony, partisan process he wants to create, but in the end, we will do it the way we always have, which is to follow the Constitution. That's a reference of quotes to the Governor's People's Maps Commission. One more topic. You and I have been watching this for 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. You had six or seven candidates running for Milwaukee County Executive. First, there was a challenge filed by one of the candidates, mm-hmm. Milwaukee County Board Chair Theo Lipscomb. He said two of my fellow candidates, Glendale Mayor Brian Kennedy and former State Senator Jim Sullivan, used the same circulator, ergo they should be dropped. The Elections Board said drop the names. The Circuit Court said drop the names. And the Court of Appeals said drop the names. So this is very intriguing because they use we're now at a point where we have paid circulators mm-hmm. to gather nomination papers. And when I talked to Representative Crowley yesterday at the Milwaukee Bar Association, I said, you use the same firm as Kennedy and Sullivan, but you, Crowley, you used it first. Therefore, that was legal. So it just intrigues me. Where we are left, JR, is the public officials that are still on the ballot, February 18th primary and April general election, County Board Chairman Lipscomb, State Senator Chris Larson, State Representative David Crowley. Your thoughts quickly before we get to stock picks.
Real quick, question is who can build a coalition February 18th to get through the primary? There's also a businesswoman who's running in that race who's not really kind of as high profile as the others. Larson's run before. There's an idea that he has an advantage because of that. But who can stitch together a coalition of voters? Also, Chris Abley, the outgoing executive, he has played in local races a lot in his time because he has a lot of money to play with. He is now doing a digital ad for David Crowley. We reported this morning the first bit of the buy is $100,000, which is fairly significant. They might do more. They're trying to figure things out. But don't forget that Abley has a very mixed record of playing in local races, so just because you spend the money, there's no guarantee Crowley will get through that primary.
Okay, good point. Two-minute drill. Stock picks.
So rising. So Daniel Kelly. So put aside the debate and how contentious it got. Kelly got on the air this week with his first TV ad. Why is that notable? It's a show of his financial strength. He had about a 3-to-1 cash on hand advantage over Joe Karofsky in the reports we saw detailing activity at the end of December. Going up on the air. Look, we assume Kelly's going to get through the primary because he's the one conservative candidate of the three, but you never assume anything in politics. So putting this TV ad up on the air is kind of like a guarantee, like kind of a safety bet that he gets through. What it also does, though, is, okay, what are Karofsky and Flom going to do now? Karofsky, there's a perception she has an advantage because she's a sitting judge. That's going to help her. But you can't assume anything, so maybe she has to spend some money to get up on TV to get through the primary for sure. But for Kelly, it also might be a chance to run up a score in the primary in February that if you can get to 51, 52, 55%, there's a perception that, hey, this guy's in a strong position because even though there's this challenging environment coming in April, he got to a big score in February. So watch for that. Next, Ron Johnson. Real quickly, same story, different week. Ron Johnson's in the middle of the impeachment stuff yet again. His name keeps coming up in the Bolton book, the latest example. But I just don't get the impression that people back in Wisconsin know what's going on or how he's connected to this. So the people I talk to don't think it really hurts him or maybe helps him, because it's just a disconnect between what's happening in Washington to the impeachment and what we're seeing here in Wisconsin. Following, UW-Whitewater. Fewer kids means less money. We are seeing, and this is not just for Whitewater, but the entire system is seeing a drop in student enrollment. That means fewer tuition dollars. We saw a campus-wide letter from the chancellor there at Whitewater. I think it's $12 million they had to cut in the next 2 years. It's a matter of enrollment. They're just not there. But there's also an interesting tie here. You know, they're not the first one with a problem. Oshkosh has done something similar or announced something similar. Stevens Point went through this process a couple years ago. We also have the governor's task force on student loan debt. We have Ray Cross talking about raising tuition. There's a lot of moving pieces right now for the system, but the bottom line is fewer kids, less money. You have to see stuff like this.
Okay, just real quickly, next week, Wisconsin and I will be covering Black History events, and the formal bills on the task force on water quality will be up in committee. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for January 31.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.